Hello and welcome to the TOVG podcast, your number one source for
what? Star Wars news and spoilers.
God damn it.
Yeah. Okay, fine. This is not going to be a Star Wars spoiler cast, although it sounds like by the sound of things,
it's too late. Everyone turn it off.
Yeah, just turn your internet off right now if you care.
Actually, better if you just don't mention it at all, because
some guy might just be
like, you see, they're saying they don't want Star Wars spoilers.
Oh, shit. No, that's right. That's actually like my Twitter strategy. Like when I was playing Undertale, I did not mention anything about Undertale on Twitter until I was done. And I don't want to mention anything on Twitter. My mind just like blanks out. Like, I think the podcast is a separate space in my mind, even though like it's really not.
Yeah.
Like people.
I mean, like realistic numbers, not as many people listen to this podcast as follow us on Twitter. So
good.
Much. Yeah. For once. Thank you.
Don't follow us on Twitter.
Yeah.
Not anyway, until Star Wars is done.
My Twitter is at Barack Obama.
Send that Twitter account your Star Wars spoilers.
Yeah.
Mine is at Donald Trump, the next president of the United States.
No, don't even
small loan of $1 million.
I think his is real Donald Trump. At real Donald Trump, yeah.
Just so you
many
know
people
want to
be
one.
Him, so.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, this is your number one news source for hearing the same three YouTubers talk to each other every week.
Yeah.
That's a real fact. So. Yeah.
We are the number one for that.
Those people are going to talk about some video games now. Matt Visual, what have you been doing this week?
Oh, wow. I'm starting first. I feel a little bit weird. I've been playing. I beat Little Big Planet 3, which was good. And I beat Metal Gear 1.
Yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 1. Metal Gear 1.
Okay. Metal Gear 1.
In that
Metal
case, Gear 1. Let me change my reaction to be like, oh, no, okay. Okay. Good. Good.
I suppose.
Yeah.
I agree. You said it was the weakest link. And it has a little bit of that old retro feel where it's one of those games where imagine getting this as a kid. You basically have to memorize where everything is and keep restarting the game in order to really beat this game eventually.
Yeah, because once you die for good, you're like through. You got to start all the way over from the top. The emulator has save states, but the original versions didn't have that.
Yeah, in the PS3 version, you can save in the elevators. And that's the only place you can save.
And it helps a lot, actually.
Yeah, because even though when you die and you have to go back 10 minutes, and it happens a couple times because some of the stuff are one-hit kills, like those barrels that like flood the whole room, or those pitfalls that randomly appear and you have to run away before they suck you in. And if you're even a little bit close to that hitbox, you're done. I don't even know if it's called hitbox back in the days, but if you're even touching that pixel, dude, you're done. Like, oh my gosh, it's a little stressful. But I gotta say, the last 2 hours of this 5-hour game was pretty sweet.
Yeah, because that the first Kojima twist in history. Even this is what's so fun about playing the old Metal Gear games is seeing how much of a demake they are. Because you go back and play them and you're like, wow, they were doing that back then. Like, I had the first big moment of that happening is when you fire the remote control missiles across an electrified floor to hit a power box on the other side of the wall. And you're like, wow, they've been reusing the same puzzle since 1987.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the game, when the colonel tells you to turn off your console,
you're like,
wow, they've been doing this since 1987.
Like, what is this? Because the game builds you up. Because the reason why the last 2 hours is the game builds you up a certain way, like, especially with the radio. They're constantly, the radio is used to give you tips from like four different people, give you tips and actually helping you progress with the game. Like, it's needed in order to progress with the game. And all this time, they're helping you. And then when you get to the endish, all of a sudden Big Boss is like, oh, go in the truck to the all the way to the right, that's the safest place. You go there, all of a sudden it takes you to the beginning of the game. And you're like, what the hell? Like, the biggest troll ever. The biggest troll ever. Like, he starts messing with you the whole time. He's like, oh, go inside the room quickly. And then you go inside the room. There's a big old pitfall as soon as you walk up. You're like, no. Like, oh, you just don't listen to him. There's always another way. But I would say this game feels like a little bit like Fallout 1 did. And I'm thinking that Metal Gear 2 is going to be like a little bit like Fallout 2, like where they kind of branch out and kind of fix some of these problems. Mm-hmm. Like there's literally like some pieces of the that you need to move forward. They're really hidden. I mean, really hidden. There's a part where they introduce a mechanic of punching walls to find out if you can put plastic explosives to blow a hole. Mm-hmm. And it's like you have to go around just punching walls the whole time so you can find these like secret spots, because it's not an optional thing. No, you need to get these things. And some of those things really make it easier. Hey, there's a whole part where if you go through and you accidentally shoot prisoners, you're done. You're done.
That screwed me my first playthrough.
You have to start all over.
Yeah, because it increases your ammo carrying capacity the more prisoners you rescue, and you need to have a high enough ammo capacity, if I'm remembering it right, to beat the final boss.
And like the helicopter, you need a lot of ammo of the grenade launcher to be able to kill him, because if you have less than 15, that's not enough. You need to extend that a little bit more, especially if you rescue a bunch of prisoners and you don't kill them. Of course, you get a rating of 4 stars, and then you're able to talk to someone that helps you open the door. If you cannot, you will not be able to talk to her unless you have all the prisoners at that point, all of them. Okay,
so
not some of them.
You start the whole game over again.
Yes.
But since it's like a super duper old game that requires precision against unpredictable traps, the thing is your second playthrough takes just like a quarter of the time that the first one did, or at least for me, even though it was still a huge pain. But it seems
enemies respawn and
from new screens. If you move out of one room and go back, they're back.
Yeah. And the alarm system, when you trick it, it's a little bit crazy. It gets a little bit crazy later on, because this is like people just flooding in, and the guns are they don't feel too well, because you're shooting this little pixel to hit this guy,
top
and they're like
in
moving.
Four directions only.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
The combat as it works in Metal Gear 1 doesn't change a lot in Metal Gear 2, and I hate to say it, but I feel like one of those problems you had with the secret walls, or just like other obscure 80s gaming adventure game secrets that you would have never found without a guide, that problem's kind of sort of worse in Metal Gear 2, but it's implemented in a different way. It's like they know in Metal Gear 2. Metal Gear 2 has a shitload more text in it. They made a lot of upgrades to the hardware and the system in between these two games. And Metal Gear 2 feels like it plays the same control scheme as the first game, but it feels like a totally different engine iteration of it. And whenever they have a stupid puzzle, the characters will like joke and laugh about how stupid they are in a very self-aware Kojima way, a lot like the last 2 hours of Metal Gear 1. I feel like the rest of Metal Gear 1 is kind of unremarkable, but you seem to really liked it.
Yeah, I in the beginning it was a little rough, you know. I expect as much from an older game, but just like Fallout 1, I found a lot of good things about it. I would say it was easier to play Metal Gear than it was Fallout, though, for
sure. Definitely. Yeah, it's a much simpler game.
Yeah.
No inventory screen. Well, there is an inventory screen, and it's just all of your shit on one screen. Unlike Fallout, where you have to like scroll through three chunky item icons that take up a quarter of the screen space each.
And you have to talk to everybody. You have to know everybody in that town. At least in this game, it's a little bit easier to refresh yourself, go back, and even restart the game if you make mistakes or whatever. I was lucky enough to have, well, I guess I have the PS3 version, so I have a bunch of saves. So if I mess something up, I can just go back and just, I have to replay a lot of stuff and make sure I do it properly. But, you know, it's still a little bit better than restarting the whole game and doing some of these like annoying sections again.
It's still weird going back to a game where making a mistake early on that you didn't even know was a mistake will fuck you in the final acts. Like, that's something that is a design element that has not stuck at all, and it's easy to see why.
Yeah, it's so weird too. Like, everybody,
the system of rescuing prisoners to increase your star ranking somehow makes you carry more ammo. It's like the logic of that is so not easy to recognize. Yeah. As I noticed my ammo and health increasing as I was playing for the first time, I didn't know it was related to the star gauge. I actually did not notice that until I gave up and went on GameFAQs at the final boss. And they were like, oh, yeah, you need to make sure that you don't accidentally shoot one of these prisoners. Which, holy shit. Matt, am I remembering this right? There is one prisoner that they place in the line of fire.
Yes. Okay, so you fight Stupid Duck or something like that. And he's like, oh, and the woman calls you. She's like, oh, my brother is one of those prisoners. Please don't kill him or I won't help you anymore. Oh. And I'm like, oh, okay. And there's three of them there and you can't kill any of them, but the hitboxes are stupid. Okay. Mm. So you can mistakenly shoot them easily. So basically the easiest way is to, because you can't rescue them for some reason, I thought you could rescue them before, but you can't. So you have to kill him first. So you have to rub up against him, make sure you don't hit anybody else, and just shoot him a couple times with the handgun, you know, because you don't want the spread to hit any of the prisoners, because it's really easy to hit other prisoners. And he's like throwing boomerangs and you're constantly getting hit. But if you stock up on rations, which you should be able to kill him. Oh, my gosh.
But that was what got me the first time. Like, I had to go back and play through the whole game and just pay attention at that one prisoner, because that's the one.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, you don't want to, because he tells you, oh, because the prisoners, you don't just rescue the prisoner of wars. They give you tips to move on with the game, so you shouldn't shoot them at all. So they give them value. This particular prisoner, brother, if you save him, he tells you to take the ladder on the left, which helps you at the end scene.
Yeah, that's another trap.
Yeah.
There's the escape the exploding base, and some of the routes that you can take, the branches will just fuck you.
Yeah, because once you kill Metal Gear, the timer starts, and then you have to kill Big Boss. And when you kill Big Boss, then you have to, you know, like, I don't know how long it's going to take you, but if it takes you a while, you only want to choose one ladder on the way up. You don't want to make a mistake. And if you choose the other ladders, they might mess you up. And then you end up failing the whole stage and have to start all over again and freaking rememorize you have to write down the feet Metal Gear. You have to write down which legs to shoot in the sequence. Or blow up in a sequence with plastic explosives. So it'll be like left, right, right, left, 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 right, 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 left, left, right. Like the whole, like 16 left, rights. And oh my gosh.
If you mess up one, you have to start over.
Yeah.
What did you think of the quote unquote story that was there?
Very, very simple yep. compared to the regular,
which is
regular
so
Metal
weird
Gear stuff.
Going back to that, even though there were Kojima twists in this game,
it gets
weird and self-aware and fourth wall breaking. But compared to literally any other Metal Gear game, including the very next one, the story is just like, mwahaha, I am evil. Come
it's
at
the
me.
Babby Metal Gear. Yeah, before they're full grown. Yeah.
It's still cute.
Yeah. Yeah, I quite liked it. It didn't take like a lot of my time. It took a lot to beat it, because you're just, if you're not using a guide, you're going commando, my friend. And it's rough. It's rough trying to find all the secret stuff. You're just sitting there punching walls all day trying to find out where you need to find this damn uniform that I need to pass through this guard thing, which makes no sense. But I had to go back. You're like, okay, this is where they tell me the mechanic. Let me punch walls for a second. And then you.
So
yeah.
If you don't mind me asking, what are your video plans for these classic Metal Gear games?
Video for each and every one of them.
Ooh,
I'm going to try to do that.
Wow,
so that's,
okay.
Yeah, I know. That's the same thing my friend
said. That's something
said.
I tried and didn't go through with.
I might take some breaks in between, you know, play some old goodies that I've been wanting to play for a while. But maybe play some Undertale after the first two Metal Gears.
The good news about going through the whole Metal Gear Solid series is that with the exception of Peace Walker and MGS5, they're all actually pretty short. I think the longest one is MGS4, which is on howlongtobeat.com averages about 14 hours. Which, yeah, I don't know how long your sittings are, but that sounds like about 2 good days to me, which is not a lot of time at all.
Yeah, that's a difference compared to all the games I've been playing, like the Fallout and Witcher series and all these other games have been.
Metal Gear is tiny by comparison. The games are dense, maybe denser, but in terms of beginning to ending, you can knock out that first playthrough super fast.
Yeah, Metal Gear. It's pretty good. I guess they're pretty good. What about you guys?
I haven't been playing too much. Well, started on the project for next year for pirate games. Played Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, the video game.
How do those work? Are they like brawlers?
Pretty much. I mean, I don't want to give away the whole review, but essentially what the game boils down to is it's like, mind you, Assassin's Creed 1 came out the same year as this game, 2007. It's essentially Assassin's Creed 1's combat. Take away some of the polish and some of the things making sense. add some really shoddy ideas for mechanics in a fight, and a combo system that doesn't matter that rewards you with currency that you don't use for anything. What it does is your combos will give you a ranking at the end of the level, and then the ranking gives you notoriety, and the notoriety gives you character unlocks for the challenge mode, which the challenge mode is just doing the same level but more fighting people. So really completely pointless to do combos aside from just killing enemies faster. It's just a non-polished Assassin's Creed combat with walking sections in between it. That's pretty much what the game boils down to.
That doesn't sound very exciting.
It's not, but it was only about 6 hours long. The highlight, which I do talk a lot about this in the video, is the voice acting, which, I mean, just all kinds of awful. The story is it's actually movie number 2 and 3 in their entirety, which is weird because it's the third game and there is a Dead Man's Chest game. So I don't know what the fuck that one is, but it was on portables only or something. I don't know. Their game's really super weird. But yeah, it just takes the story of movies number 2 and 3, completely butchers them, removes all context. The part in the movie where Will meets his dad on Davy Jones' ship is because Will gets tricked into selling his soul to Davy Jones to pay off Jack Sparrow's debt. And so he's trapped there, and it's there's plot there. In this one, they just pull up alongside the Flying Dutchman, and Jack is like, go get the chest and the key that has Davy Jones' heart. And Will's like, yeah. And he goes in and kills a bunch of dudes. And then his dad's like, I haven't seen your face in a long time. And he's like, father. And then he's like, I can't escape, but you can. And it's like, what is he escaping from? He's not trapped there. He's just he's just on the ship. He just willingly swung over on a rope. He's fine. There's no emotion attached to this scene. Just that is everything in the game. But the highlight is Jack Sparrow's voice actor is really good, nails the Jack role, which is incredible. And he has no games to his name credited before that one. So fucking good on him for just crushing his first role. I think he's in Grand Theft Auto 5 and stuff now. But the worst voices in the game are Crispin Freeman, who plays Will. Just Crispin. Bombed so bad. Probably the worst voice acting performance I've ever heard. And then the other one is Elizabeth's voice actor, who has been voice acting since 1985. And also just trash.
I guess they just didn't have direction.
their like direction Peter was Dinklage. Please give me minimal paycheck, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you'd think wouldn't be a problem for a game with a major Disney movie license like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, is this is the weird thing. The other voice actors, I'd say a good 8 or so characters, are voice acted by their actors from the movie. And they all suck. So, go fucking figure.
So I guess, paycheck. I guess the game got a shafted budget.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it looks like a launch PlayStation 1 game,
but it's for the 360.
Well, I from my research, I think all the versions on the different releases are different. But yeah, it was 360, PS3, Wii, PS2.
There's
and PC.
PC screenshot that I found when looking it up that has the most atrocious looking HUD I think I've ever seen in my life. Just now, when I like Google image search for Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End PC game, and in the corner of this HUD is a some of your usual PC game HUD elements,
yeah,
but also a real ass picture of a roasted chicken, that just looks chicken. Really, really slimy and gross. It's like next to a meter of hearts and glowing orbs is this like grocery store catalog cutout of a rotisserie chicken.
Yeah, that's your health. You use chickens and you restore a lot of your health. Just want to point out another thing that I'm just kind of giving away from the review, but that chicken makes the crunchiest crunch noise when you eat it. It's like you should be eating apples for the noise that it makes. You like use the chicken, it's like,
oh, that is violent. That is vile. Oh no.
Also, every enemy in the game is like default humanoid reskinned for their different zones. It's really bad. It's a bad game. It's like it's funny and fun to be annoyed at, but like it lost the charm like 3 hours in when I'm like, I'm just fighting dudes. That's the whole game.
Have you played any good pirate games yet?
That's the first one I played. So, I mean, I do still have, I have Shantae lined up. I have Monkey Island. I have Assassin's Creed 4. So I have some games that have potential to be good.
They're just on their way.
They're on their way. I'm going to try and disperse which ones I think are bad and good. I mean, I don't want to do like a whole bunch of bad games and a bunch of good games back to back. I want to like try and go back and forth, have some positives and negatives. There's some good stuff about Pirates of the Caribbean, but it's definitely suffers from lack of a budget or probably a lack of caring on Disney's part or whoever made it. Euro something. It was like, forgot the dev's name.
It's so weird how movie license games work.
Yeah,
because they have such expensive branding, but the products always feel so cheap and shoddy.
Yeah. It also just like there's so many plot things where it's like, what? Like, OK, you guys have seen the movies, right?
Which has been a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen them.
OK, at the start of 2, there's like that scene where it's like a weird prison cliffside torture place. And then like they throw some coffins into the water and Jack Sparrow pops out of one and he starts rowing with the guy's leg and you're like, Jack Sparrow.
yeah.
In this one, that's the first level and you like, but you start in the prison and you like kill everybody on your way out. But the very first scene is you're in a prison cell lying pretty just chill, like relaxing on a bed, and the door is just open and Jack Sparrow's dad walks in and he's like sleeping through your own hanging, Jack. And Jack's like, it's just like meaningless banter that doesn't really make sense. And then his dad just disappears and then reappears at the end part and kicks you into a coffin. It's like, oh, so let's take that whole scene and then downgrade it to a not as clever scene. And also nobody knows who this is because this is the second movie and he doesn't show up until fucking doesn't. I really like those movies in this step. Very upsetting.
Oh, man.
On a lighter note, I started playing Neko Atsume.
What is Android. Neko Atsume?
It's Neko Atsume, and it's the game you've probably seen screenshots all over Twitter of for like 2 years now. It's cute little kitty game. It's a mobile game, and literally all you do is you have a screen,
aww,
and you put little cat things, like little like toys and food, and then sometimes when you check into the game, there's cats, and they're hanging out doing the thing that you put.
Oh
and
my god.
Look, it's this. So cute.
Oh, wow, holy the art shit. For this game.
Is there an Android version? I want this.
Yeah, I'm playing on Android.
Oh my god.
And
it has
the
a
best
butthole.
Thing,
it has a cat butthole.
Yeah, that's
wait,
one of the
what?
Things.
The cats have buttholes. That's
they have
adorable.
Little X's on the back of them. They're like
my
Edmund
gosh.
McMillan butts.
They actually do have butts. Oh my gosh. X marks the spot, right?
I gotta say, this game is like, this is probably a really great, yeah, I get it. It's probably really great example of good mobile gaming, because it's like, it doesn't time sync, because there's nothing to really do except for take pictures of the cats and then collect the little fish that they give you, which is your currency. And if you go to the microtransactions bit where you can buy gold fish to like get like different things that you can't get with the gray fish, mm-hmm. The maximum priced one is $3. And that gets you like the big things. Like you could, with the amount of goldfish you buy with that, you can get like the second room and some of the big like cat toys and stuff. And so it's like, I don't feel like this game could ever gouge me out of more than maybe $10. And I'm like, I feel more obligated to buy because it doesn't have like a $99 option like a lot of mobile games do.
Wow.
Yeah, the maximum option is $3, which is like, yeah, I'd pay $3 for a mobile game that was good.
Yeah,
so I've I might end up spending some in the future.
Paid, like, I've happily paid more than $5 for the few good mobile games that are there.
But, yeah, Super Mario, no, not Super, Super Brothers, Sword and Sorcery, Uncanny Valley, a lot of good ones out there. Yeah,
but I mean, this looks like. Judging from screenshots, this looks like something I would want to have like as a screensaver. Like,
I mean, that's pretty much what it is. It's
freaking adorable.
There is an in-app when you take pictures of the little cats, you can store them in albums for each cat that visits you, and you can also take a full screen picture that just like takes a picture of the entire whatever's happening on screen, and it saves it to your phone's files instead of an in-game. Album, so you can like make your background that. So
and send them Zap to
knows
your friends
exactly
on
what
Twitter.
It's doing, and I like that.
I am actually going to take out my phone and download this cute ass kitty game.
Yeah, I'm down
right after
now.
The podcast before I get on to play some super gritty, grimdark Rainbow Six Siege.
Yeah,
it's still good. Siege. They put out a new patch. Yesterday, actually, that fixes a lot of the complaints I was having with the netcode and the chat limit. The team and all chat limit was ridiculous. You had about 52 characters to work with. So if you like lost, you would type in "you guys suck," and then the next message would have to put in CK. It was really, really annoying, and they improved that. They still have a lot of work to do in terms of how to fix the interface and whatnot. But I feel like this is a very strange situation I'm seeing, where I'm seeing a lot of preemptive hate being aimed towards a game that's great, that I can't really say is invalid hate. But at the same time, I also had low expectations for this game myself. Like, I haven't really liked a Ubisoft game since, I don't know, Splinter Cell Blacklist, maybe? And so I didn't really, after going through The Crew and Far Cry 4, which Far Cry 4 was fine, but it was also Far Cry 3, I wasn't really expecting them to really hook me again. But I guess what I was forgetting was that when Ubisoft is not doing the regular Ubisoft sandbox game formula, they actually have some pretty good ideas in them. They're just also dealing with all of this other extraneous outside of the game bullshit that the game still has to put up with, like Uplay, yeah, and then the $60 price tag, and then the microtransaction cash shop. A lot of times whenever I talk to anyone who isn't playing this game, their first few reactions will be some nasty shit based on one of those three facts. It's the microtransactions, the price tag, and the lack of campaign. I haven't heard a lot of people really complain about the gameplay in this game because it's a really, really good game. And shouldn't that be what matters most? I don't know. I feel like my loyalty is being tested with this thing.
Did you got a review copy, right?
Yeah. So, disclaimer, I didn't have to feel the burn of actually paying the $60.
Yeah.
But I still, like, the way I think of it, I'm thinking back to Battlefield Bad Company 2, and I'm thinking, you know, what I did pay was $50. Would I have paid $50 for Bad Company 2 if it didn't have the campaign? And the answer is absolutely without a doubt, yes.
Yes. Yes.
Because the Bad Company 2 campaign, I feel like I see a lot of people who like it, but I hated it.
It's not that good.
It was Call of Duty, but worse. And the Battlefield 3 campaign was like bottom tier dollar store Call of Duty.
Yeah, it was pretty dry. It's pretty dry. They had these characters that were always like over, you know, like it was trying to, it knew what it was.
The characters were fun, but I mean, that's just skin deep. The actual game involved pointing and clicking on bad guys with some low recoil, laser accurate iron sights that just tunneled you through the point and click shooting gallery, and it never did anything nearly as interesting as the stuff these games do on their multiplayer modes. And I absolutely positively despise those kinds of tacked on campaigns. So the whole argument about it not being a campaign is something that it's kind of confused me. And I think a lot of the big reason why is because I feel like people are using the wrong word. If they said, oh, it doesn't have bots and it's $60, I would be like, yes, totally agree with you. But as far as there not being a campaign, it's not exactly something I feel super sympathetic over.
Yeah, I actually listened to, I don't know if you guys keep up with Total Biscuit stuff very much, but he did a 40-minute like solo talk on multiplayer games. Yeah,
I skipped to the Rainbow Six Siege section, and
I mean the whole video was about that.
But he still said something wrong. He forgot about the PvE terrorist hunt modes, but whatever.
No, he didn't.
Are you sure? Because he in the little section that I skipped, he talked about how it was $60 for basically one mode. And the thing is, if you want to get technical, there are like three different modes that the 5v5 mode plays, but there's also this whole big PvE terrorists hunt part of the game that a lot of people forget about, but I actually don't blame them because it's not as good as the other one, but I mean, it's still there.
He definitely mentioned all of them.
Okay.
He said there's one mode is the main matchmaking mode, which is why it's a, like, it keeps it from being a game that peters out with its fan base because people don't pick favorite modes that they play against people in. There's one mode that you play against people in.
Well, yeah, but there's also like hostage and bomb defusal, but that's just technicalities.
I mean, there's one matchmaking where you can play against other people, so you can't pick and choose your like Halo style, like big team battle, free for all, SWAT, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just confined to one.
And I wish
global thing.
I wish they could do that. If they shipped it out with a dedicated server browser where people could get creative with the parameters they're playing this game in, it would be a lot easier to deal with. One of the big frustrations is having to wait in a queue after every match. You have the option to rematch the same people you played against at the end of a match, but if one person on either team drops out, then that means you have to wait through the queue again and have them set up another person, which can last up to 90 seconds. And it's a real big issue in the early game where you can only play a mode they call casual, where you play for best 2 out of 3 rounds of rounds that last about anywhere from 45 seconds to 3 minutes each if they max out the timer. And then you get booted back to the queue again and have to wait another 90 seconds to get back in. And it's just for the amount of wait time versus the amount of time you're playing, it's way too disproportionately skewed towards the wait time. After a while, you can unlock a ranked mode that has you playing for best 4 rounds instead, and the winner has to have a 2-round lead, and that's much, much better. And they say they're going to be rolling out a hardcore mode later on too that'll be kind of like ranked but with much less HUD elements. I'm really looking forward to that as well, because now that I've gotten into the rhythm of the game, I'm noticing that it's losing a lot of the difficulty and tension, which means I might have to start playing clan matches.
Oh gosh.
To get some of that good fear and paranoia back again. But even then, I'm still really, really enjoying it. I have a little group of friends on Skype that I've been playing with, and they all seem to really, really dig this game, and it kind of breaks my heart to see the situation it's dealing with.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can sympathize because still wish Titanfall was a thing, but whatever.
Yeah, people speak fondly of Titanfall. When they make the comparison with Rainbow Six Siege to Titanfall, they do it sympathetically. Besides that,
Titanfall.
I played some more of those Neo Geo bundle games. I'm kind of warming up to the concept now that I've actually gone through them. The thing is, even though it's a shitty emulator in front end, these Neo Geo games are still really good games. Me and a friend did Baseball Stars 2 last week, which is a hilarious game. I want to double Scrib's old recommendation about it. The thing that blew my mind about it is that there is a bullshit ref mechanic. There's a dice roll that the ref will just make obviously the wrong call.
Oh, wow.
And when it does, it's hilarious. He'll either and it'll be for not minor game breaking moves, basically like whether or not a runner gets called safe on first base at the last minute. But sometimes the ref will like clearly and utterly say that the runner's out even when he was on that base for a few frames before the ball landed. And it's cute. It's got a really, really charming over the top, super duper SNK style to the grand old American baseball tradition.
Wow, it looks good. Oh, it's one
really
of those games where it's like kind of timeless a little bit, you know? It's
good
like
pixel art is
super
timeless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And another thing I'm noticing when going through these games is that SNK has really good pixel art. Oh, yeah. Every one of these games looks gorgeous. And one really cool one that I've never heard of before is Shock Troopers, which is an Ikari Warriors clone that is just about some of the most bombastic, explosive, bloody, gory co-op shooter side scrollers I've ever played, and I've never heard of this game at all in my whole life. And in terms of the quality of the pixel art, of the visual feedback, of the spray patterns that the bosses and the monsters are using, it's just like top-notch stuff. I was playing Metal Slug 1 last week with the same friend too, and I think I came to the decision that I don't think I like Metal Slug that much.
Oh, why?
It's a quarter muncher. It's a microtransaction machine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it definitely is. I can't disagree with that. Even though I really do like it, I spent a lot of money at the laundry playing that game.
The good thing about doing it with this Humble Bundle is that you can just put in as many quarters as you want, but it's still kind of kills the enjoyment of the game when there's no fear or tension, because a lot of the bosses from the midpoint onwards just spam the screen with bullets. There's no way to dodge a lot of these attacks, and you just end up pressing the quarter button and start button and feeling a sense of failure that you really had no control over. But I don't know. I'm sure there are some crazy people out there who can do a one credits run of a Metal Slug, but until then, I think
for the normal
fucking Shock Troopers is seems to me like if you want to explode good looking pixel art, I totally recommend, would love it if you guys checked out Shock Troopers.
Wow. It's like a top, like a smup kind
shmup.
Of
yeah
a smup kind of Metal Gear, not Metal Gear,
it is an eight way top down shooter.
You can knife them as well.
You have a melee attack when you use it up close on a bad guy, but until then you kind of point in a direction and hold down the shoot button and strafe a little bit in that direction to mow down bad guys who haplessly wander into your bullets is great. One of the characters is so clearly a Rambo ripoff, and a lot of the other characters that you can choose from have really, really cool, distinct personalities with some cute little artwork associated with it. And also, like, bloody, violent, horrifying deaths for these mooks who keep wandering into your gunfire.
Oh, this kind of sounds like Hotline Miami to me.
Yeah, kind of. God, I really, really, really enjoyed that game. And I was playing it, like, 30 minutes ago, too, and I'm surprised no one fondly remembers Shock Troopers. Did it not get an American release or something?
I've actually never heard of it, to be honest.
Never heard of it. This reminds me a little bit of Ghostbusters. They had an arcade game as well.
Oh, yeah. I see what happened here. It came out in 1997 originally, but wasn't released in North America until 2012 on the Virtual Console.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Huh.
See, you tweeted earlier, you were like, how has nobody ever told me of Shock Troopers? And since I still, at the time, didn't know what you're talking about, my first thought went to Battlefront because of the... Well, they're Shock Troopers in that. The Stormtroopers with the jetpacks.
Yeah,
the
no different
silver
thing.
Armor. Yeah, and because I was just playing Battlefront 2 yesterday to capture some footage for a friend. And I was like, I played two matches. He's like, yeah, I only need like two matches. I played two and I was like, I want to play more. This is really fun.
Oh,
I keep forgetting how fun that game is.
Battlefront?
Battlefront 2.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I have to remind myself.
Because I was looking up the new one.
I was looking up some footage of the new Battlefront and I saw something that shocked and offended me, and that is you can play as a stormtrooper without their helmet on.
And
I don't know if this was just something I saw on the character select screen or if you can actually do this in the game or not, because I noticed when I was going through footage of my beta playthroughs is that the stormtroopers' voices, this is something that really bugged me in the game, the stormtroopers don't have stormtrooper voice. They sound like regular ass people. They don't go, show me some ID. they instead say, push up, put fire on him. Rah.
I mean, I assume that what you're hearing is what they're hearing through their radios and not their projected voice through their helmet on the outside. Does that make sense?
Well, in my TIE Fighter review, I used a clip from the Tatooine level in the beta where you're playing two guys escaping stormtroopers. And the chatter that they use, it sounds really, really, really un-stormtrooper-like.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
It's kind of hard to describe, but it seems like this game's taking a lot of liberties with how stormtroopers have been presented. Anyways, that's like way off topic, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've actually run long already. We should get to some news break!
See you next week.
The Bush. And welcome back to the Tavgalcast.
Hey, we fooled you.
We decided to come back after pretending to not.
Kept you waiting, didn't we?
Yeah.
Speaking of keeping people waiting, we finally have an end to the Kojima Konami saga of 2015.
I don't know why I was doing 20th Century Fox. Any other theme would have been more
I thought you were about
applicable.
To do Star Wars, but okay.
The credits can roll after the shocking 90-minute mockumentary expose about the feud between Konami and Kojima and the bosses between the two. We have epilogue text credits showing Kojima now living a happy future for the rest of his life, doing a new studio called, of course, Kojima Productions, in partnership with Sony Computer Entertainment.
Oh.
Which makes a lot of sense to me. They already have a new game concept planned. I guess they have had this one ready for a while. It must not be Silent Hills, I'm guessing, because, I don't know. It might be. They basically just said they're making a edgy, high-quality game that they want to have new lovable characters for. It's going to be a new IP, which is why I initially said it wouldn't be Silent Hills, but at the same time, there's really no reason why they couldn't use some of those old concepts over again.
Concepts.
Right.
Very, very vaguely talking concepts. You couldn't use anything direct or else sure Konami would look for any excuse to just actually kill Kojima.
Well, yeah. It might be a kind of situation where a canceled project ends up influencing another one, like Fallout Van Buren got turned into New Vegas as the years rolled on. So yeah, they have a new studio, of course, called Kojima Productions, that sheds some light on why putting his name on Konami products might have been an issue around March, because if they saw this coming around March, he probably, and if he wanted to keep a studio named Kojima Productions going, then maybe some theories regarding Kojima's name being part of Konami's branding in terms of their contracts may have been true, which means that it would have been a good thing for him not to have his name on their products if he would want to use it again less than a year later for an entirely different publisher.
That's true. Did you see, before we move too deep in this, did you see the a couple images that surfaced on about Kojima Productions? First of all, their fucking team lineup, like, band photo that they took.
No, no.
You guys haven't seen that? No. Oh my god. Okay. I'm gonna link it to you right now. Maybe you can tweet it out and some people can go to your Twitter and find it.
Okay.
But for fuck's sake, this is the coolest picture of any game devs that I've ever seen in the history of forever. Like, it is so Kojima. Oh, just oh looking at this picture.
God, that is it reminds me of the 90s.
Like, yeah. the caption of this player. Tweet. Kojima Productions look like they're either a J-pop band or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's so perfect.
Everyone's wearing either black or dark gray.
Yeah, and they all have like sick jackets or blazers, cool pants, sick boots, and it's like
they're in a well-lit city park at night with some intense lens flare behind them.
Game development rock stars, dude.
If literally the top of this said like Kojima and the Snakes, I would listen to that band regardless of the genre because they look so cool.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, it's not all bad. As you can see, it seems like he's having fun. Yoji Shinkawa is back on concept art. A lot of old veterans are coming along with him from the previous Kojima studio. So I mean, hopefully business will continue on as usual, except maybe he'll have a lot more creative freedom, breath, and wiggle room, and can't just make Metal Gear Solids over and over and over again, because he's been wanting to branch out since 2002. And a lot of people have said that they'd want his first project to be some kind of Kickstarter Metal Schmear Schmalid.
No, I don't successor. Want that. Yeah, I want that never to happen.
We're done. Like, maybe some other kind of stealth action game, but only if the lines are so, so blurry compared to what we've been playing from him for the past 15 years.
I want to see some weird stuff. I want to see some other stuff.
I wouldn't mind it. I would mind it if he did Schmetal Schmear Schmalid, but I would not mind it at all. In fact, I would want him to do Schmilent Schmill.
Schmilent Schmill.
Yeah.
Mm.
As a spiritual successor. Oh, shut up. The spiritual successor to Silent Hill. Because there's not enough of those. There are certainly enough Metal Gear Solids. There's not enough good Silent Hills in the world.
Well, I mean, I think there's plenty of things that are trying to be that if you go check out Steam Greenlight, but obviously we know how that's going.
Oh, yeah. Get that money.
What money?
Money from the poor people. Oh, this is Silent Hills. Throw money at.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, whatever they make, I'm sure they'll be okay. Like, SCE has a surprisingly good track record with big budget games. Like, Until Dawn and Bloodborne were not expensive, super hype AAA levels. There was actually some interview quotes back during the PS4 reveal about how Killzone Shadowfall wasn't that much more expensive than the previous gen efforts, but they all look like super cutting edge games that still manage to appeal to small niches and do it well. And so that's why this makes a whole lot more sense to me. Like, SCE is the kind of console exclusive premium games publishing house that seems like a perfect match for him. Definitely. You know what? This might actually be best case scenario. I would rather this happen than him go to Kickstarter instead, which might still happen with like Shinmu's doing that. But already we haven't gotten there, which is like best case scenario for me.
Here's the thing. I feel like Sony, like when the case of Shenmue, it's like that game has not been in the limelight for ever, like for so long. But this is literally like the biggest upswing in people talking about Hideo Kojima, probably of all time. This is like the most people know who he is right now.
The year of Kojima.
Yeah, seriously, just because Konami, like, fuck them, and everybody knows that now. That's like a household name to scorn is Konami, and we all know that half of the reason is because of how they treated Kojima and their
and his team.
Business stuff to do with Metal Gear Solid. Mm-hmm. And so now he, like, Kojima's at like the height of his fame, I'd say. Like,
yeah.
at least of being known. And it, like, maybe
it's
not
so great.
You know what I'm talking about.
Well, I don't know if great's the right word. The world is saturated in Kojima coverage because we have the double layer of what was already a crazy year of intentional, deliberate marketing hype and ruses for Metal Gear Solid 5, as well as the unintentional actual real life drama of his troubles with the parent company.
Yeah.
And so you had like two different avenues of crazy Kojima stories. One about a head transplant doctor in Cyprus who might have been marketing the game through his super serious medical research, which turned out to be totally true or totally false, but was still a fun part of hyping up the game versus Silent Hills getting canceled, PT getting pulled. And Kojima ultimately having to rush out this game that was already too long in development in a not really finished state. So as far as what's happening to him now, though, it's pretty good, hopefully, situation. I'd much rather this happen than like Bethesda scoop him up or even like Capcom, or he has his own studio called Kojima Productions, just like it always was.
Yeah, I mean, the point I was getting at earlier was I'm confident that Sony sees that they don't need to do Kickstarter with this because
whatever Kojima
puts out, people are going to purchase. And he's proven himself a good game dev. Did you guys see the video that the Sony's video announcement of their partnership with Kojima Productions?
Yeah. Yeah,
so good.
Very, very polite, understated.
Yeah.
Andrew House is super duper sweet.
Yeah. Also, from what I can hear, he speaks really good Japanese.
I mean,
it sounded like it. I don't speak Japanese, but he sounded pretty proficient.
They really could not have done this announcement better.
Very respectful.
Yep.
I mean, I would have just been like, fuck Konami. We got Kojima. What up?
But instead, like, they were like,
dollars.
Hello and welcome. Please understand.
Yeah.
We are now doing a project with Kojima. You look beautiful today. We love you.
Yeah. Speaking of looking beautiful today.
Yeah, Bayonetta is going to be looking beautiful in Smash every day after they roll her out.
Yep.
Whoa, what?
You didn't hear about this?
No.
It turns out I was right, you fuckers.
Yeah, I guess
they did put Bayonetta. It only took a year, but it happened.
Oh,
and
my god.
This is
getting loose, man.
They also
loose.
Put Corrin
in the house
from Fire Emblem's Fates.
I would have rather had Corrin in the house than
I
Corrin
would have too,
the
because
house.
I'm sick of fucking Fire Emblem fucking Animu sword characters already.
Why couldn't they put Tharja in? Tharja's cool, but they went
why
with
couldn't
Corrin.
They put King Kirul or Shovel Knight or fucking I would have preferred
Raven.
I would have preferred Goku
Montana.
I actually don't like Dragon Ball Z and I would have liked Goku.
Yeah. That would have also had more potential for the cross universe fun character mashup appeal of Smash, which is like the whole point of the game.
Hey yo,
yeah,
Corrin, more like Borin.
Oh,
I mean, in the real, watching the trailer, don't give a shit about Corrin because she is from a video game that actually is not available in the U.S. right now. So, dumb. But moveset looked pretty cool, but dumb. But
Bayonetta, on the other
cool.
hand.
Bayonetta, on the other hand, looks OP as fuck.
Yep.
Like she already had a Smash moveset. And it looks like Smashes or summons or Wicked Weave summons. It looks like her final Smash is a little ridiculous.
It's Gamora.
Where let's see how naked she gets.
She doesn't really get it. You don't even see her. She summons Gamora, and all you see is Gamora.
Oh, okay. But anyways, I always thought Bayonetta makes a whole lot more sense for Smash. Everyone seems like...
I'm cool with her. I think she's great. She just looks like she's going to be Brawl's Meta Knight in Smash 4. She looks fucking ridiculously overpowered.
Yeah.
Good. I will use her and no one else then.
Did you see the ledge grab Smash? The easy smash, like, what is that? Like, why does that exist?
the gigantic heeled boot that comes down and meteors you off the ledge.
I can't wait for that. The commentators to...
Now I no longer have to use a dinky little me girl that I put a witch hat on.
Did you see,
actually use a real Bayonetta character.
Did you see that both her up B and her down B can be used twice in the air with a double jump between them? Did you see that?
I just can't wait for watching a tournament. All I hear is D1 say, "Destruction!"
I fucking love D1. He's my favorite thing in the Smash community. He's the best thing to happen to Smash, period.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. This just makes me realize that once all the characters are out, I'm going to have to buy the DLC fun pack and have a bunch of friends over every day for the rest of my life.
Oh, I haven't even bought Mewtwo. Well, I mean, I have Mewtwo. I haven't even downloaded him.
Me neither. When they put out a compilation back, though, I'm getting on that ASAP. Oh, God. I have a coffee grain stuck in my throat.
I was going to say, you on that 420 over there?
420, please.
Don't make assumptions because of my name.
Weed, man.
What? I don't know. What does George have to do with smoking? All right. Also, they showed Cloud details. He looks pretty cool. And he's out, Cloud. Actually. He's already out.
Cloud and Bayonetta. There's no way they didn't get a bump in sales. There's no way.
What a time to be alive.
I know, right? Jeez, just take it out and give it a touch.
I think my favorite part of the Smash Direct was Kirby after inhaling Bayonetta with the cute little hair and the beauty mark and the stupid guns on his feet.
I didn't see the guns. Now I have to go back.
He doesn't have them default, and then when you use the B move, he like lays flat on his face, and so he just like rotates because he's a ball, and he looks absolutely ridiculous because like Bayonetta makes it look like flexible and sexy how she positions herself when she shoots her shoe guns, but Kirby just like flops on the ground and they shoot off of it. It's so funny.
I'm looking at it now, the gun is just kind of coming out of his butthole.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
That's adorable.
Yeah, so Smash stuff is cool. That's apparently the last Smash thing, I guess,
which also means they'll be putting out a compilation pack.
And no Shovel Knight.
Oh, yeah, I guess. But I mean, Bayonetta's fine too.
I mean, all I'm saying is throw Corrin into the ocean and give a Shovel Knight instead.
Just drop him out the window and...
I will sacrifice Corrin to the great Lord Dagon.
I'm just really happy to see that this character who I wanted so bad and everyone told me no actually happened.
What's Corrin? Who wants Corrin?
Nobody, because nobody knows who the fuck he or she is, because they're in a game that's not in America yet. Why would you do that, Nintendo?
They did it with Marth and Roy and Melee.
But
it was a different time.
She doesn't exist. I hope she just like no one ever plays her. She just sits there and collects dust.
Same, because like no offense, Fire Emblem fans, you have the representation in Smash. You have more than enough.
More than enough
like,
OP characters.
It'd be like if they added a Mario character at this point, people would be like, I guess.
They have
like
almost as many as Pokemon, except Pokemon actually has like a diverse, visually distinct, different suite of monsters. Yeah. And Fire Emblem, everyone's a human being with,
I think every single Pokemon in 4 is different. Jigglypuff, Pikachu, Mewtwo, Lucario, Charizard are all completely different characters. Like they have no like crossover moves. Whereas Lucina is a clone of Marth and Roy is a clone of Marth. And yes, they have different properties, but they're essentially the same character that is deviated from a bit.
There are almost as many Fire Emblem characters as there are Pokemans.
Yeah, that makes me sad. Shovel Knight. I would have been settled for King Karool, but Shovel Knight. Man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Let's move on.
Oh man.
They could have Gordon Freeman from.
I would play the shit out of Smash if they put Gordon Freeman
from,
in there
from the Half-Life games made by Valve. Who
Final
are...
Smash is he gets the physics gun.
Oh my
god. And
gosh.
He gets to shoot the blue beam and just grab characters and like grapple them and throw them off the stage.
Like in the games made by Valve, who are presumably being sued by the French Consumer Association.
Oh, I see what you did there. You were trying to segue, and I thought you were just making conversation.
So, okay, this is a very strange story, and I don't even know if I should be putting it on here, because there aren't any mainstream game news websites reporting on this yet, which might mean that it is entirely a hoax, a mistranslation.
Just skim it, then. Don't go too deep, just in case.
So, according to a French news website, a French consumer association called the UFC something like that.
Hey, all right.
Has sued Valve over some clauses in their subscriber agreement that they consider illegal or abusive, according to EU law. And this happened a few years, actually. They've been sued by a number of a number of European states. Germany, as I was saying in my mind, it was the tip of my tongue being a big one. But basically, they say that Steam subscriber agreement forbids users to sell their games despite the transfer of ownership of digital products and licenses in the EU being legal, which was the big Valve versus Europe case last year. And this is something that would be really weird to imagine happening, the possibility of reselling digital game licenses. And I'm wondering if the Steam economy would really work if that were the case, because they have these massive, huge Steam sales that everyone loves. But if they sell those things off to people who then resell those codes again as retailers, how do they compete with that, with the prices, the incredibly low prices that those retailers buying the keys originally from a Steam sale would be able to mark those up as it's competition?
I don't know, man.
So you can only buy a game once on Steam, right? No, you can buy gift copies.
You can buy gift copies, but you can only buy one for yourself.
Holy shit. I can easily imagine, though, people setting up gift shops if this is... Well, I don't know. It's really, really hard to imagine that in the first place, but also the concept of reselling digital goods, which seems good, right? But the thing is, on a digital marketplace, you really have no supply side. Your supply is infinite. You don't price by supply, you only price by demand. Huh. Okay, so anyways,
I don't know what to add to that, sorry.
the French Consumer Association also says that Valve declines any responsibility in case they get hacked and users' personal info gets stolen, which is great. Fine. Perfect. I don't think anyone really wants to argue that point, that Valve should reimburse customers if their account gets hacked. Valve claims ownership on the rights of any user-created content uploaded on Steam, which is probably something that a lot of people who make user-uploaded content care about, which would be good for them not to, which sounds okay to me, but not also really relevant to what I do. I don't know. That's not really something I've looked much into. A lot of people have made a lot of money on the Steam marketplace, and I'd imagine that they'd be in a better situation if they had creative rights over the stuff they were putting out. They say it is impossible to get money on your Steam wallet back if your account is closed, deleted, banned, which also sounds cool. Yeah, nothing really I want to argue about. Turning my fake Steam fun bucks into real bucks, why the hell would I not want to do that?
Yeah.
I presume they would only allow people to do that if their account gets closed, deleted, or banned, as specified in the Consumer Association's translated list of demands. However, I have to wonder why they would want this that situation to work, reimbursement of what is essentially a gift card. Because if your gift card from a store gets stolen or hacked, then the store doesn't reimburse you the value of the gift card's money. And that's essentially what a Steam wallet is a gift card.
Mm, that's true.
Also, they're mad that Valve is applying Luxembourg's consumer law, regardless of the user's country, which I guess means that they want Valve to be following France's law when selling digital games in France. Which isn't that why the European Union exists, is to keep like trade kind of free amongst the confusing map of nationalities and regulations and laws that exist in Europe?
I'm not sure, because I don't know much about the industry in Europe.
Yeah, this is a really complicated topic.
It is.
And this is also why I feel like the story might be kind of more fishy than the current sources are letting on.
Take it with a grain of salt.
because right now there is literally a thread on NeoGAF and a thread on Reddit and the original French websites, and that's about it.
Yeah. In less confusing news, this is something that I'm reading off my Twitter feed. You remember, did you guys hear when Bubsy was getting greenlit, the Bubsy ports?
I think recently? So.
Bubsy. So,
but the old shitty mascot platformer, Bubsy the Cat.
Oh, yeah.
So they tried to get it ports greenlit for Steam so that they could make money so that they could make another one. Slowbeef tweeted about an hour ago. Bubsy is released on Steam, but the executable is actually a wrapper around a SNES 9X and a ROM. And the license agreement is apparently a mess, so it's questionable how legal this is.
That's what they did with these Neo Geo games on the Humble Bundle.
Yep.
I guess companies now, this is all of a sudden normal, I guess.
Pirates being managed by pirates.
Oh my gosh.
That sounds like a good idea for a video series. And then I look at the camera and wink. This is an audio podcast, so I had to tell you that part.
I could hear the sound of your wink.
The loud. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how I feel about this, because, they put the games up, I guess. I mean, they're, selling a digital copy of Bubsy in the truest sense of the word. But it's like the amount of effort that a lot of PC ports versions you see of old games from the 80s or 90s is about the same amount of effort you could put in emulating them yourself.
Yeah, only have to pay for them.
And so it's confusing, because it's like they have the right to. I mean, if they're pirating their own game, then that's not illegal, but if they're using the Super Nintendo's emulator code without the original author's permission, unless it's open source under some kind of Creative Commons license that allows that, then that would be sticky. Because the thing with this Neo Geo situation is that the emulator they're using was acquired from Gamefly. They have an actual license to it, but the ROMs they have in these and the games that you get in the Humble Bundle are literally the same files that you can find on Cool ROM. I tested it, and it's
gosh.
They made what almost amounts to a Macromedia Flash front end that then loads an emulator they downloaded from Cool ROM onto a ROM they downloaded from Cool ROM onto an emulator they acquired from Gamefly. So all the company, .emu, had to do to put out these Neo Geo games is make a flashy front end that has a launch button, a save state button, and an options button with such luxurious options as window size, full screen or not.
Yummy.
No customizable controls. You just have to gamble that your computer detects a 360 controller and maps it into this emulator. And apparently that's what they're doing with the Bubsy now, too.
Ray.
I mean, it's not illegal, but it's still kind of a shitty, lowbrow, minimum amount of effort required way to put a game out on PC.
Yeah.
And with that, we have one last story, and that is that Konami is once again assuring the rest of the world that they are still making Metal Gear stuff in the most vague way possible. They have a job listing put up for, quote, new Metal Gear, end quote. In all capital letters. It's super basic, vague. It just says
yawn.
Qualifications. You need experience in high-end game development, planning, etc. And it's for new Metal Gear. So
must be mute and also unable to type, and also no social media accounts.
Mobile development experience preferred.
Qualification. Must have pachinko machine experience.
I was about to say. Highlight any and all relevant gambling machine experience. But yeah, if they make Metal Gear 6 or whatever without Kojima, Kojima is probably just going to be laughing his way to the bank with whatever he's doing with a real game publisher now. Because Konami is no longer that as of this year. Although
I think now that Kojima's gone from Konami, I think this would actually be a really good time for us to just completely stop talking about them for the rest of their existence.
Maybe. The one
like,
thing,
what if we just gave them nothing? Just like didn't feed the fire
but
at all.
What
and
if,
just like
what if Metal Gear Rising 2 happens?
Pirate it.
Ooh, that hurts.
Hashtag fuck.
Metal Gear Rising is one of my favorite games ever. I could easily imagine Platinum putting out another. There's still room there, and they did a damn good job the first time. And if there's one more Konami game that could possibly exist that I would give a damn about, that would be it.
Pirate it and then Ooh. Put three $20 bills into an envelope, send that to Platinum Games directly.
Send it to Kamiya's Twitter account.
to his Twitter, tweet him a picture of three $20 bills and be like, yo, if I ever meet you, this is for you.
I'm just trying to imagine him like blocking his mailbox from people putting money in it.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's all we got for today. We're at the end of our list now. So
quite a long podcast. All things considered.
How do you guys feel about the week and how it's gone?
I feel like I have a lot of work to do still.
Yeah. I mean, it's Christmas next week, baby.
Yeah, don't.
So
don't
Merry Christmas to everyone who's listening.
To death before Christmas. Oh, that's right, because we won't be doing a podcast next week. We'll be we'll be gathering around the fire with our families, drinking eggnog and taking pictures of our ugly sweaters.
Probably. Actually, excuse me. Won't be getting tipsy, but I will be wearing the ugliest Christmas thing known to human beings. Because this year, well, last week actually, which is also part of this year, I had a little holiday gathering at my place with some friends, and it was ugly Christmas attire.
Ugly Christmas.
Ugly Christmas attire, and I went to Walmart. And I got myself a Keep Calm, I Have Gifts shirt. So I think I won for absolute worst Christmas anything all years running. Because it feels like ugly Christmas attire in recent years has turned into what's the coolest, best reference that I can put into an ugly Christmas sweater. And so people have like Star Wars ones and shit. And I'm like, no, we going full ugly.
Full ugly.
Full ugly.
God. All right. And with that, let us take our leave and continue on with our lives.
Yep. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Yep. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes.
Tell
Merry
us
Christmas. Happy holidays.
Share us with your family at Christmas.
And don't smoke too much bush.
Wait, how would that work?